All right. Well, welcome back, everyone. This is almost like a staff meeting.
Basically.
Yeah. We've got Coley here. We've got Rachel fighting a little bit of a cold. And we've got Pastor Darius with us here today because when we first started this podcast, we were doing a mix of things. But one of the things we did was we got to hear kind of the first half of your story. And we didn't really realize it was just the first half until we finished. And we were like, we need a part two.
There's so much more to know.
Exactly. Yeah. There's so much. So if you haven't heard the first part, we recommend that you listen to it. Can we put that in the show notes?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. It was in season one back last October of 2022. But yeah, we'll link it in the show notes so you can go back and give it a listen. It's not like there's spoilers here or anything, but it's good to get the whole context, I think.
Yeah, because I mean, last time we kind of covered a lot of like the pre-Jesus part of your story, right? So one of the things that I'm always struck by with your story, Darius, is how there's so many things that the Lord used leading up to your, like how you met Jesus and your conversion that that just have been transformed since. Some maybe not in the same way that we would like. but why don't you just do like a quick summary of like where up to where we left off? Would that be all right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess pre-Christ life, pretty hectic. And I think there was a lot of dark things that I had to deal with. And so, you know, being a child who was molested and all these things and going into drugs and alcohol and gangs. And so I think pre-life to Christ, I had to deal with this sense of despair. And I think there was times that I didn't want to live because of the situations that was sometimes forced upon me, some of them that I chose to. So I dealt with this despair of not wanting to live and attempting suicide and not, I think it was at the point I didn't feel like I deserved to because of all these things and the things, life that was thrown my way. And meeting Christ through, he's setting up these situations where I give my life to Christ, and preach Jesus was not a smooth transition as well.
Sure.
Because I think of like how I get to transition to where I am now. I think where we left off, I ended up giving my life to Christ. And then in 2006 and by 2008 through separate conditions, I end up legally blind and in a wheelchair.
Right. So the irony of like, here you are finally freed from sin and death and pain in like the worldly sense.
Yeah.
And you're free in Christ and you're stuck in a wheelchair. And yeah. You can't see.
Wait a second, God. What is this
life? What's happening?
Yeah. Thought it was supposed to be new life, not this like life that continues to burden me.
Yeah. What was that like at the time?
It was difficult because, you know, I went from this deep despair, emotional, spiritual despair, and living without hope to now I'm in physical pain all the time due to these conditions. And this life now with Christ was one of enduring a different type of hardships. But those hardships were leading me to become like Christ through, but also it was leading, causing me to have this desperation. And I look at it from like going from despair with no hope to this desperation where I had hope and I had to make a choice then was, do I go into not despair because I had hope in Jesus, but do I go into a depression because now this hope that I have in this life that I have in Jesus is not what I thought it was going to be. And so I had a choice at that moment was to cling to depression or cling to God and this hope that I had in him. And so I went from having all of these dark situations happening to now experiencing doctor after doctor, medication after medication, trying to figure out what was going on with me. And, you know, the doctors, they can treat, which they try to treat, all of these illnesses that I had that was popping up with my colon shutting down, and it was like, do we remove his colon?
Mm-hmm.
Like me having to move away from my family and live in Rochester to go to rehab, and all these things that was medically happening. The doctors can treat those things, but moving for such a dark past to now this life with Jesus, having these physical problems that I never experienced before, I had this soul problem that was happening, like this transition, like my soul needed treatment from these dark things that I had experienced, and now into these physical traumas that I'm experiencing, like how does that relate to this new life with Christ? And I only found healing within that through experiencing isolation. Like God had to remove all these things from me. I lost the ability to walk and to partially see. I lost the ability to really function in everyday normal life. I was so highly medicated that I couldn't. We only had two kids at the beginning of all of this medical dramas, where I couldn't be alone with the kids because I was highly medicated. So they had to go to childcare. And so Jennifer went back to work and I was stuck at home. I couldn't work anymore. So all these things that I expected with this new life, new lease on life that I was getting had got taken away. Like, I thought I was going to be this great father. I never knew that I was going to live long enough to be a father. And then that got taken away. And so only thing that I had left was to cling to depression or cling to this God who I found that can give me hope. And so it was really through clinging to God and through constant seeking and crying out to the Lord that this anguish that I had in my soul, that I found healing through that, even though my body was going through tremendous pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of when Paul says that outwardly we're wasting away,
yeah,
but inwardly we're being renewed day by day. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that was kind of what was happening to you, like in a real time sense.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I mean, I have a sense of like age and, you know, aging and my body's not what it used to be, but you had like, it's like you had two come to Jesus moments.
Yeah.
Almost like the one salvation moment and then the, okay, but are you willing to follow me through whatever I bring?
Yeah.
Or bring you through.
Yeah. It's this old saying, I don't know where I heard it from, but like, it's this old saying, like, you see, like, when the foundations of your life are shaking, and then you look up and you see it's God who's shaking those, and like, what are you going to do with this shaking? Like, is this shaking going to draw you away from me or draw you closer to me? And that's, we all have to make that choice, no matter, you know, not all of us are going to deal with tremendous physical suffering, but we all have a choice when our lives are shaking in some sense. Are we going to allow that to draw us closer to God or draw us away from him?
I think last time on the podcast, you had mentioned too, like at one point hearing from the Lord that a promise that he would deliver you at some point, and that he would bring healing when he had accomplished what he had for you in this life. You know, that's a beautiful promise, but it's also one that like didn't come immediately, and maybe you're still experiencing waiting for the fulfillment of that promise. Can you speak to the fact of like how to cling to God's promises that you know him to be faithful, but are still waiting for the fulfillment of those things?
Yeah, it's not easy. Like, because I still have tons of doctors, still do it. None of the conditions are gone away, even though some things are better. We are in the Antioch, we're doing a men's book study, and he said something that I just loved and spoke to me in the book Leadership as an Identity, Crawford LaRitz. He brought up how God made the promise to Moses that like he was going to deliver Israel. He was going to be this great leader and deliver them out of slavery into this promised land. But like when you look back at it, God only gave him step-by-step directions. Like, he never gave him a full picture of like, this is all the provisions I'm going to provide for you.
Yeah.
This is all the things that the people are going to say and do. These
First,
all-
there's going to be plagues and they're going to doubt your leadership.
They're going to doubt your leadership. Yeah. They're going to turn back and say, we should go back to Egypt. Like, he never gave him like routes and, routes and schedules and stuff. But God orchestrated circumstances and events that forced Moses to return to God and asking him for help. Like when he got down from Mount Sinai and the people, they turned their back on God and they was worshiping the golden calf. And he said, I can't deal with these people. I cannot go forward if you're not with me. Like,
yeah.
And God, you know, he gave him this promise that he was going to be with them and help him step by step. And it caused Moses to cry out to God. And that's been so true regarding the promise for healing for me. And I just have to cling to God step by step. And a part of that clinging has been in 2 Corinthians 12 and 10 and how Paul cried out to God for healing. He said, my grace is sufficient. And so dealing with sickness and waiting on this promise, like Moses, I have to trust God step by step. And I have seen pieces of that healing. That's been through medical interventions and some of them that's been through miraculous healings as well. But the biggest thing is that I have learned through it all is that God has orchestrated these circumstances in my life. Sometimes hard circumstances. But that forces me to make a decision. Am I going to fall back and cling to a depression and this state of like, where I don't know what my life is going and what I'm going to do, or am I going to ask God for help? And as I seen myself crying out to God, he has revealed himself faithful by granting supernatural grace and strength and wisdom and patience that I would not have in and of myself. And so I have seen him in peace, in steps, reveal that promise. Now, I don't know. And now is the final fruition of that is when we get to glory. And so
right.
In a sense, I'm still holding on to that, but I have definitely seen him show pieces of that throughout mm-hmm. my Christian journey with him.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up the children of Israel and Moses being led through the wilderness, and it reminds me of even the manna that was sent from heaven. It was like literally their daily bread. It only lasted a day, except for when God supernaturally allowed them on to prepare for the Sabbath, right? But he literally only gave them what they needed every day because their provision that they needed for each day came from him. And Jesus so clearly in the Sermon on the Mount or on in the Lord's Prayer exemplifies to us that really like God will provide what we need each day.
Yeah.
And that's so hard for us. Like we just want to see the full fruition of things of like, God, just give me all the answers now. But I am really encouraged by, you know, hearing you say that, like, sometimes I just have to rest in the fact that God's only going to answer parts of things and he's going to show me if I just cling to him. So that's a beautiful testimony to God's grace in your life. What are some of the physical ailments that you're still struggling with today? I know you had mentioned that, you know, you were legally blind at one point. You were at a point where you couldn't really take care of your children on your own because of how highly medicated you were. How has God kind of shifted that script, added new things, taken some things away? How has that changed over the course of the past 10 years for you?
Yeah, so I'm not in a wheelchair. So that's I think that's one of the biggest changes, even though the ailments that forced me to be in there still exist. And so basically, my body takes touch, pressure, and sensation as pain. Mm. And so me walking, me standing, I can only do so much of it before at some point my body will give out and I would not be able to walk for a while. Mm. So I have to be mindful of that. And so I have the implantable devices that are helping with manage physical pain. I can see better. Nighttime is still a little hard, but I have implantable devices again in my eyes that give me better vision. And so I'm still dealing with some of the, because I have a nerve disease, most of the body is ran by nerves. And so mm-hmm. one of the biggest things is a nerve disease. So I have issues, like normal people can go to the bathroom. I have trouble with that. I have slow colon motility. So my colon doesn't actually function well to process food well. And so I can't intake as much food as normal people, and I can't expel it as well as normal people. And so there's still just a lot of functioning of my body that doesn't function normal. And so all of those are things that I just have to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
And you literally have been the poster child for some of these things too, because, I mean, my husband and I were literally out on a double date with some friends of ours from Antioch a few months ago, and we were sitting in a restaurant, and all of a sudden, it was Joel Alexander, looks up, and he's like, is Darius on TV right now? And like in the restaurant we were in, there was a TV and there was a commercial that Darius was in about a pain management thing. But it was like, yeah, people in the community, even when they come in for grocery distribution, sometimes you're recognized because people in the community know you as somebody from that commercial that like has been a voice of like pain management is a real need for people going through serious and chronic illness. How has God allowed, you know, dealing with chronic illness to give you a love for others also going through physical pain?
Yeah, I think he has definitely like used it to like also like create opportunities, like going through many doctors and many things, like you meet people, you have conversations with people. People randomly ask me weird questions. And so.
Oh, yeah. I'm pregnant. And you just gave me, you're like a list of like anti-nausea pills. You're like, ask your doctor about this one. Ask your doctor about this one.
So yeah. You know, the scripture is true. Like, you know, he gives us, God comforts us and gives us the ability to use the knowledge and the things he has brought us to actually comfort other people. If I never going to get my guts taken out, like I would have never known about all these nausea medications. Yeah. So like we ran even, who knew 6 years later, I was going to have a conversation with you about nausea medication. You're like, I couldn't plan that, but you know, but God knew. And so, but these have definitely given me a sense of a part of that calling that I had to the Lord of like, he'll heal me when I accomplish what I have him. The second part of that, which I don't, people don't typically know, and I don't share that part of the story a lot, but a part of that was later that, because that happened like at early in the morning in the shower, like in the AMs of the morning. But later that morning, I had took a nap and I had a dream, and I wasn't into pastor. I was just in behind the scenes in ministry at the first church I was at that I attended when I gave my life to Christ. But I had a dream of me being a part of this church. And it didn't look like a normal church. It had chairs and we wasn't in like a normal setting of a church. And there was just like a mix of people in the congregation, and people were worshiping God. People were confessing sin. And we was just, it had this sense of like biblical sense of like caring for one another and people being united in Christ. And when I woke up, I just had a sense of like, of God, like connecting that call that I had to you accomplish. Like, this is the connection of that I have for you to one day be a part of that. And I had a sense of that dream. Like I was a part of leadership, but I didn't know at the time what that was, but I knew I was a part of it because I was up front with the leaders. We was, talking and so I knew that there was a sense of that. And then God is like, think about like the community around you, and just had this weight of like looking at the community around me. There's a sense of like these people are sheep without a shepherd, and they're like, there's people that's going through dark and hard things that I have been through, some worse, and like, how are you going to use what I have brought you through to share your testimony with people and bring them out of darkness into light? And so just this sense of weight of that, when Jesus looked into the crowds and had compassion upon them, of like this gut-wrenching compassion, like, what are you going to do now with your life and this calling that I've placed on you to share your story with others and bring them out of darkness? And so it was just that weight of like, I have to do something with this. Yeah. And part of that was through encouragement of people that God put in my life was to go back to school and get a degree in ministry. It was like, are you sure, Lord? Like, I'm legally blind and in a wheelchair. I don't think that's the best time to go to college. Yeah, like, no, I want you to give this another try. And so, and once again, God just orchestrated it where I end up going to Northwestern, and they had a really great disability program where I got like audiobooks and really great professors that worked with me. And it took me 6.5 years because I was having surgeries and other things was happening in between to get a 4-year degree. But
we call those super seniors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was just God orchestrated so many events throughout there. It was because I ended up going there, I got connected with the Gospel Men project that was happening. That's how I found out about Antioch and got connected with Antioch. So God really just orchestrated all of these events, and that's why I ended up here at Antioch through going to Northwest and being connected with some guys that was going to Hope and going to a men's conference where Andy was preaching, and God wanted me to leave the church I was at the time, and I didn't know where to go. And then I was like, oh, let me check out the church where the short guy was at. And so I end up coming here.
Is that what you identified with?
Yeah, that's what
short guys unite. Did you always get a sense for, like, you know, you said you felt God's calling on your life to share this love and compassion with those in your community. Did you always know that was going to be through vocational ministry, or how did God kind of like transform and kind of clarify that to you?
I have no desire for pastoral ministry. I always knew I wanted to be like in vocational ministry because I was at my old church. I was heavily involved in like Sunday school and all other things and discipleship programs. But people constantly told me like, you're going to be a pastor someday. You're going to be a pastor. I'm like, I have no desire for that. Like, I just want to give back and serve this God that brought me out of these really hard and dark things. And I just want to give back to that. And I just knew I wanted to work in ministry. I didn't know what that was. I just knew I wanted to be a part of ministry. And so it wasn't until later on through sickness and God revealing, like, I wanted to be pastoral where that calling really came to fruition. But it was never like a clear sense of like, this is a specific thing. I just always knew I wanted to be a part of ministry. Mm-hmm. And later on, like step by step, he revealed like exactly what that was going to be.
Yeah. And you mentioned our former pastor, Andy O'Rourke, in that. Can you share a little bit about, you know, when you came to Antioch because of that short guy, how is God, like right now you're our pastor of community engagement. That's kind of what people know you as here and now. But how did God kind of move you along that path to where you are today in this position?
Yeah, because really the Lord, amidst me being, I started to get sick at the old church. And then there was just some spiritual unhealthiness that was happening at the church. And so dealing with that while being sick was like too much. And I had felt like for 2 years, I attended the men's gathering for 2 years where Andy and the old pastor at the time, Jamie Buchanan, was where they had attended and got to know them there. And for like 2 years straight, Lord was telling me to leave this spiritually unhealthy place as I was getting sicker. And so I just didn't know. That was the first church I ever attended. I didn't know where to go until I got connected, like, well, I'm going to attend Antioch. And so I had at the same time people telling me like if they felt like God was calling me to pastoral ministry. And because of the spiritual unhealthiness and leadership that was happening at the old church, I had no desire for that. On top of it, I didn't feel called to it. And watching those things, I had a distrust for leadership. Mm-hmm. And so when I came to Antioch, and then right away, like, Jamie was like, oh, you should lead like a community group. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Like, And so I got plugged into doing a community group. And so it was really through like spending time with Jamie and Andy and being able to watch pastors and leaders actually truly live out the life that they say they're living, like truly following Christ, it slowly started to break down that wall. And so it was like step by step again, like God got me into leading a community group, then becoming an elder, then kind of doing a pastoral residency and seeing like, oh, is this what God might be calling you to? So it was literally like piece by piece, like God just breaking down this wall and leading me closer to this call that he had for me. Mm. And it was through relationships with leaders that was actually living out their faith in me, being able to watch that and see that there's people who genuinely love God and genuinely have a faith that they're living out.
Mm. I know in our previous episode, we had kind of touched on the fact that God has really been like rewriting the script of family dynamics for you, especially growing up in a home where you didn't have a present father. And then seeing how God has provided spiritual fathers mm-hmm. and mentors for you is just huge. How do you think that's played out even in continuing to transform your own parenting? You have teenage boys now. I think your eldest son is going to be, a sophomore this year?
Yep.
So kind of taking us further into the future than where we left off last time, how has God molded you into someone who, yes, now has received love from spiritual fathers and mentors, but now how has he shown himself faithful in allowing you to do that as well to your own kids and to other people in our church and other people's kids too?
Constantly reminding me I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, that's what it is. You know, it's like, I think the life that I have now and in these is continual lessons. Like, I'm learning what it is to be a father, you know, through the word and learning what type of father God is. Mm. And because, you know, I don't have the best odds. Like, someone like me didn't have the best odds growing up without a father, growing up becoming a father at the age of 20 and being changed by Christ. And so there wasn't best odds for me, but like through these spiritual fatherships and through watching God, I'm learning. Of course, I make mistakes all the time, but I think it's this life that I have now is a lesson of continual persevering and persisting and just having an open heart to like growing and learning more. And I only do that through pressing into God through a couple of ways, like through the word, like pressing into God through his word and prayer and really trusting in him to guide me through because leadership of like a family is hard and is not taken lightly. And leading God's people is some of the hardest things you can do. You look at the story of Moses and him crying out to God saying like, I can't do this without you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's knowing that I can't be a good father without Christ. I can't be a good leader without Christ. And it causes me to press into community through fellowship of believers and learning and growing from others. And really through, I have to continually press into worship as well because I'm always in pain. And so it can lead me to easily give up on things, like give up like, well, I don't want to be a good dad today. Like, I just want to sit down and mope and worry about myself. But like, I have to continually press into God, press into the word, press into worship, press into Sabbath, which I'm not really good about that, because I can easily get distracted and go into myself and what I'm enduring and the pain that I'm enduring. And so it allows me, as I'm continually pressing into worship, into the word, it takes my eyes off myself and It was like, I got to learn from my mistakes. I got to grow. I got to continue being willing to learn and to grow. And sometimes that's apologizing when I'm not being a good father, when I'm not being a good disciple of Christ. And so I think it's hard, but I just continually keep my eyes on Christ. I think has been something that I learned that I have to continue to do, because life is not easy, even for me now, mm-hmm. even with all of the changes and great changes he have made in my life.
Pain is such a weird thing to talk about because it's invisible. and it's subjective.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm curious if you have any ways of like analogies, and this isn't, I'm asking you this because I know you don't volunteer this kind of information because you don't like to make a big deal out of it. But I often, sometimes when I just see you like working or playing with your kids, or your kids are playing with you, tackling you or whatever.
Yeah, playing on you.
On you, yeah. Uh-huh. I often wonder, like, what is the day-to-day like? So, like, a couple weeks ago, your foot was in a boot because it was swollen and infected. And, like, okay, we can see that. I kind of can imagine what that would be like. But we're sitting here, and you say your body interprets all touch and pressure as pain. So we're sitting in a chair. You have a laptop on your lap. Your arms are on armrests. Your feet are on the floor. Like, can you describe at all, like, what type of pain are you feeling right now?
Yeah, I guess it.
And I know you're really good at ignoring it at this point, or like you can differentiate it, but.
Yeah, so it's, I guess it's different layers. And so, so a lot of it would be similar to what you hear for people, because nerve issues, people who are diabetics, they have a lot of nerve pain.
Yeah.
So, like now my hands, they're like, I don't do well with cold. Everybody know that I wear snow pants like 10 months out of the year. So like my hands now are like numb. There's tingling in them. There's numbness. There's tingling in my legs. Sometimes if someone like close or someone grabs my leg, my hand, I still feel like your hand is still there.
Even after
you let go. So it's like something is still grasping my skin. If I'm like going to water, it's like a million bee stings are like stinging my legs. Just because the sensation change. And so it can be, and right now because I'm sitting here, it's like aching, numbness, tingling, all throughout my legs and in my feet. When I stand up and walk, it's like shooting and stabbing pains every time I take a step. And so it varies.
Sure.
And it depends on what actually I'm physically doing. Because it's tingling in my arms now. But like if I was to hold something for too long, it'll start to ache and tingle and be numb. And so it really... Right. It's all over the place, depending on what part of the body it's happening to. Because it used to be where when the disease has first started, it was only in the lower half. But over the years, it progressed upward and started to affect the upper parts of my body. And so,
and one of the inserts you have in your back is a thing that can like trick your nerves into thinking it's just a tingle, right?
It's called a neurostimulator, and what it does is it can send the signal to the brain faster than the pain signal gets sent to the brain. The device is the lower part of your spine controls the lower half, the upper. So this device is placed at the lower half of my spine, so it's only for the lower half of my body. So what it does is it tries to tell my brain that I'm feeling kind of like a internal TENS unit, like a vibration. So it tells my body and I can set it to different types of vibrations.
If people don't know, a TENS unit is often used for like muscle tension, or sometimes nerve pain, but it'll like confuse, if it's for muscle tension, it uses electrical pulses to confuse the muscles in order to relax. But in your case, they're just going straight at the spine.
Yeah. And so, cause I can't take a external one because that pulsation will be extremely painful.
Did you try that before they did the internal
one? I have to get nerve testing every once in a while, and it's extremely
that sounds awful.
Because it's just a little shock for people, but when your nerves receive any pain, anything that's pain, so it's just like like knife stabbings, and so it makes me my brain feel like, oh, you're feeling like this external pulsation, and it tries to overlap when I take steps, and so I have a remote for that, and I can increase that pulsation or lower it, which because of nerves, I can't have it too high because it starts, then that becomes pain. And so it's just a weird balance that I have to figure out.
Okay. I just think it's helpful to, I know that like, it's not about the specifics of that for you, but I think it's helpful for like the people of Antioch just to kind of hear the specifics of what it is. And I mean, heck, if this isn't a good enough plug for joining the community engagement ministry and helping with groceries, Darius loads and unloads his car every Monday morning. And I confess that I only help about 40% of the time, if that. and I don't have shooting pain in my foot. So if anybody's free on Monday mornings or Tuesdays, you could come help Darius lift heavy things and walk around on concrete. Because it would be a bit of a relief. Well, maybe it wouldn't be a relief, but it'd be one less thing you'd have to do. So I see what you mean about like connecting with when Paul says like three times I begged the Lord to take this away, and he basically said no. because my grace is sufficient for you, and here you are, you know, free, and I'm just like, praise God, you're not in a wheelchair and you're not totally blind. You can drive your kids around and you can serve and you can preach and all sorts of things. But what kind of advice would you give to somebody who is maybe not yet at the place that you're at? And I don't mean to speak too highly of you and make you uncomfortable in that way, but like is still wrestling through the like, I can't believe I'm here. Whether it's physically, maybe it's pain, maybe it's ability. How would you counsel that person to pray?
Several scriptures look at like several scriptures that talk about like the purposefulness of suffering. Like Isaiah 53 talks about enduring, like talks about Christ enduring, is enduring while suffering. What is it? 1 Peter 4, I think, talks about, entrusting your soul to the one, the faithful creator, while doing good, while you're suffering. And
entrust yourself to the one who judges justly, I think.
Yeah.
Like, even while you're suffering
and continue to do good. And Romans 5 talks about like the rewards of suffering, like peace with God and hope. And I think the biggest thing is like it's you're gonna have horrible days. Like I have horrible days. Like I have days where I'm like, I cried a lot, like I don't want to get up, I don't want to move, I don't want to do things today. But I'm trying to suffer well. Like, I think praying and asking God, like, Lord, teach me to suffer well. Like, it's the Lord might heal you miraculously where it goes away. He might not. He might take away piece of it or none of it at all. But like, how am I entrusting my soul to you as I suffer, and teach me to suffer well? Because he has the power to, you know, give us strength. Like Paul says, like, I'm going to boast in hardships and endure these things.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest key is thinking about in Hebrews 2, where it talks about, like, Christ suffered the cross because of the joy that was set before him. Like, we
Philippians,
can...
Philippians 2?
Is it Philippians or...
For the joy set before him, he endured the cross.
Cross? Is that Hebrews or Philippians?
Philippians.
Two? Okay, and he talks about so just about that joy, and I think about that in my own life. Like, yes, I've seen pieces of that, but like I'm still waiting for the true fulfillment of that. As we wait for that, that might have happened, like when we are truly become like Christ on the other side of this life, right. Where we never have pain and suffering endure anymore. But like, how can I focus on that joy? Like focusing on that hope and that joy gives me the strength to get out of bed and endure it. Like focusing on the little joys that he said in my life, like going from one who moved twice a year as a kid to being able to buy a house at 20 years old and raise my kids in one house for the last 16 years. Like these little glimpses of joy and hope and peace that he has given to us in the midst of this little bit of suffering or pain that I'm going through. How are we focusing on those things and let those things give us strength and power to endure the things that we're going to? And most importantly, just that joy that we have. Like, we're not going to leave a life of suffering and go to an internal suffering. No, we go to an eternal joy, and that alone gives us hope to endure whatever we go through. And I think that's been one of the biggest things for me to focus on. And like, I have something to look forward to, but this would never be again. And so.
Yeah, this is, I think what I hear you saying is like, there's kind of two ways to change your perspective from like, just simply this sucks, you know, and I don't want to do this. But like zooming out, remembering the big picture of like, this will end, and then there's eternal, no more pain, no more suffering and joy and in the presence of the Lord. But then also like this refocusing of the present and to like not focus on the pain or the struggles, light momentary affliction, as I see irony, as Paul calls it. But even like how those things, I'm reminded of when Paul, I think it's in 2 Corinthians maybe. Sorry, everyone, I don't remember. but when he says, you know, if we suffer, it's for you. And if we are doing this, like all of these things, if we're insulted, it's for your, you know, he has all of these comparisons of the ways that they're more than happy to take the hit, so to speak, so that the church can thrive. And it's not quite a parallel to you, but I think about looking at, like you're saying, these small joys, but the comparison of like, okay, Lord, if I have to go through this, but your family's intact and your kids know Jesus and they know that they have a dad who loves them and they're loved by the Father, like that is a huge redemption even in this life of your story and of your neighborhood and of all of these things, that is, it will set up for for like, I think, a cascading effect of redemption should the Lord, you know, be gracious enough to allow that. And I don't know. I think that's to me, like, look, just watching your story is an incredible effect of, it's cool that what the Lord brought you out of, but by doing so, he also brought your kids out of it.
Yeah.
And he brought Jen out of it. And the generational effect. And I think too, like, I'm so encouraged with how you guys have decided to stay in North Minneapolis, you know, because it's where you started. When you got that, I mean, it's where you bought your house.
Yeah.
And at some point in the last 5 years, if not sooner, but especially in the last 3 years, there were more than enough times to say, you know, we could sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if we went somewhere easier?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you were actually interviewed on the news. You and Jen were interviewed outside your house after, was there a shooting down the street?
There was a shooting down the street.
Which is actually unusual for your block.
Actually, yeah. The like, one that happened actually a block away from us, which was unusual,
Yeah. And do you remember what you said? I only remember it kind of in spirit.
I don't know.
Like, what needs to happen in this community?
Oh, you know, I think I said it was a heart issue, like that somewhere along the line, it was a people's heart needs to turn to God. Like there's a heart issue that humans bear. We don't see each other as created images of God.
Yeah. And like, so even just the opportunities you've had, like, because you've continued to just be present, you know, and I realize that specifically isn't about your pain, but, these chances you have to speak because of where you are and yeah. who you are. And
it was a good like revealing of that on Sunday. David, the kid's cousin, came to service on Sunday with him.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's good to see him.
They were, we were singing worship, and they were down there talking, and I was about to lean over until David, like, sing the song or be quiet. Like, but then he walked over to me, and he said, oh, Dad, I was talking to Adore, asked about why do we celebrate Easter, and I'm telling him about the resurrection. But and he said, but I forgot this one thing. Like, what is that? Like, what happens after the resurrection of Jesus? Like, and so, like, wow. So I was like, it was just a moment. Like, mm-hmm. here I was about to, like, like shut it down. And, like, here God was
scold
doing something. And,
church,
like,
yeah.
it's this generation thing where now he's sitting here with, if God would never orchestrated all of these events, like, we wouldn't be here to where now my kids are being raised Christian
yeah.
and following Jesus, and they're having conversations with their cousins about, like, why do we celebrate Easter?
Because as naturally as they talk about their razor scooters yeah, or whatever.
Yeah. Like, and so it was just a beautiful moment.
Wow, that's so cool.
You know, I see sometimes in the lives of believers and in certain parts of our culture, this idea of, like, well, things are broken and that sucks, so we're just going to rest in the fact that God will fix it someday. But I'll just let him deal with that in eternity. I don't see that from you, and I'm really thankful for it. What I see in your life is, yes, it's ultimate trust that God will restore and renew things, but also this understanding of our calling as believers to, like, we are here to do the work too, right? Christ didn't come and just, like, wait around for 33 years before, like, fulfilling his calling to the cross. Like, he did work. He restored and brought renewal of hope to people's lives through meeting physical, tangible needs. And I see that in your life. While you're waiting for the own restoration of your own body and some things to come to full fruition in eternity, potentially, like, in the meantime, you're like, I can bring restoration to my family. I can bring hope to this other family who walked through the doors of our church. I can go out into the community and spread hope this way. You're not just sitting around idly, which is such an encouragement to all of us of, like, yeah, maybe we've got this quote unquote, like, fire insurance, right? That a lot of Christians claim, but we're not just called to sit back and be comfortable with it. We're called to spread that hope. And, you know, hearing you talk about, like, bringing your petition to God, even in this season, it reminds me of our church a few months ago had, we were going through Psalm 55, and Pastor Patrick had encouraged us to write psalms of lament of our own, of how we, of what things we need to bring to God. And I think the formula he kind of gave to us or encouraged us to use was to turn to God, give him our complaints, because we've got a lot of them, right? Ask him to do something about it, and then trust that he can handle it. And, you know, hearing your story, you've got a lot of things potentially to complain to God about, right? Things that are different from what other people struggle with. But I see so much in your life, a testament to the fact that, yeah, you're asking God and you're claiming the promises that he's given to you, but ultimately you're trusting that he's got it and he can handle it. And that if he's big enough to bring you out of some things from your past, he's big enough to handle your future too. And I'm really encouraged by that and hope that our listeners are as well.
Yeah, I have plenty of them. There's days I have Garden of Gethsemane moments where I'm like, Lord, enough is enough. Like, like, just fully take this cup from me. But then I have to, like, Lord, like, but there's so many great things that you have done in spite of this and because of this.
Yeah.
And so, like, how, like, just teach me how to trust you and live in this and bless someone else because of what you're bringing me through. And so, not always easy, but as we cry out to the Lord, as we commune with him, which is just sharing our intimate thoughts and feelings, like he proves himself to be faithful.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I love that. I guess just one more question, kind of like, what is the Lord doing in you right now? What have you been learning? What have you been wrestling with? Yeah, take that anywhere you want. How are you growing right now?
Always learning, growing as a parent.
Rachel.
Especially having an army. Like, it's hard.
You guys have to play zone defense, probably, and offense. Well,
and especially, like, in today's culture and having children that go to public school is so much that they're inundated with and, like, so much that the culture tries to put upon them. And so, like, you always learning as a parent these days, like, how to grow, what conversations to have with them, what conversations not to have. And so I think, and now that I'm having teenagers, it's like, it's, I'm like halfway into this new phase of life. And it's just a new thing learning to have teenagers. But I think it's just, same old. I think it's just learning to endure struggles. Like, my life is just always full of them for some reason. And so there's always something, whether it's a car breaking down, whether it's family issues. I think it's just a constant learning for me and teaching for me, like, how can I be faithful to the Lord in spite of the circumstances I'm going through? And so, though in different seasons, like right now in this season, like, some suffering circumstances are a little different. It's more focused on family. And especially like extended family sufferings. Mm-hmm. And so, it's like those four things that I learned are, like, in spite of these current sufferings that look different, like, it maybe it'd be family struggles. But, like, how are you in the Word? Like, how are you praying and worshiping? Like, how are you spending Sabbath time with God? So it's like these four lessons of, like, being in the Word, being in community, being in worship, and being in Sabbath. It just changes from season to season. Mm-hmm. So right now it's like the Lord's teaching me, like, how are you doing those four things in the midst of family struggles? Mm-hmm. And so, it's just like he's moving those four things to different things, even though sickness and stuff is always a part of it. But it's like these big rocks that happen right now.
Okay.
Like my extended family is a big area right now of struggle. And so the Lord is really teaching me how to be faithful in those four areas regarding that.
You know what God just brought to my memory? Oh gosh, it was probably like 2 or 3 years ago. We were having some kind of, I don't know, teaching seminar or something on a Saturday morning at Antioch. And it was on a Saturday morning. And I think just the night before or in the wee early morning hours of that Saturday morning, there was something very traumatic that happened within your family that it was unclear as to whether or not a family member of yours was going to be, dying soon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so sudden and so unforeseen. And I remember you were on schedule to, I think, babysit kids that Saturday morning for whatever training it was. And I remember calling you or talking to you that Saturday morning of like, Darius, be with your family, do what you need to do, like take care of yourself. You've probably been up all night with all this trauma. And you said to me, where else would I be other than church? And the first time I saw you that Saturday morning before anybody else was here for that training, you were on your knees at the front of the church, just singing and praying to God. And I remember it struck me of like just the testament of when faced with trial in your life or trauma, the first place you turned was to God and you just wanted to be with his people and be in his presence. And I don't know, I think that is just such a testament to his work in your life. And I know you're still going through trauma and and issues with your family, but I don't know. I think it's God is continuing to work through you. I think you've seen healing in your nuclear family, but I think God is going to bring healing to your extended family through you too. So just know that you're encouragement to me through that and hopefully others in our church as well. say.
Well, thank you, Darius, for coming in again as we all grab Kleenexes.
Thanks, Rachel.
It's a good, sorry. It's a good thing this is an audio podcast. Oh, man. A video one. Yeah, I love it. That's awesome. If you guys haven't listened to the first half, go check it out in the show notes. And if you have further questions, I know Darius would be totally open to grabbing coffee and helping you process your own struggles and how Jesus can meet you in those as well. As would we.
Darius can be also emailed at darius@antiochcommunity.org.
Two R's. Not like the king in the Old Testament.
Yeah, not like the king.
Darius, not Darius. All right. Well, I think we're out for this one. We will see you next week.